My name is Shireen Assemi. I am 41. Today is Monday, March 9, 2020. We're in Fresno, California. And the name of my interview partner is Ava. And she is a StoryCorps staff member.
Yeah. My name is Ava Ahmad Beghi. I'm 26 years old. Today's date is Monday, March 9th, 2020. We're in Fresno, California, and I'm talking with a new friend, Shireen Assemi. So, Shireen, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. Yeah. So, we're both Iranian.
Yes, we are.
And we're both born in Iran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, actually.
No?
I was born in Louisville, Kentucky in 1979.
Well, so, okay, tell me. Oh, you were born in the year of the revolution.
Mm-hmm. And my mom, that year, my mom finished, my parents were here for school. And my dad had finished his board certification, residency and the board certification. My mom had just finished her PhD. Mm-hmm. And so she literally gave her dissertation. And then 2 weeks later, we moved back to Iran.
Wow.
Because they wanted to go back and make the country great and all that. And, you know. But that didn't quite work out.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your parents and what their background was?
So, my dad is a surgical oncologist. He actually retired several years ago. My mom has an EDD in education and all these masters and whatnot. And she taught at Fresno State, but for years and years, she was a program director for a mental health. I don't even remember what the program is anymore, but it's like a mental health bridge between maternal child health care and mental health and maternal child health care. So she did that for years and years. And then finally, I think 5 years ago, she retired. Mm-hmm. So they both went to, they did their master's and, you know, PhD work in the States. And they went back right after the revolution. And my and soon after the war started, the Iran-Iraq war started. Mm-hmm. So it's me, my brother's 2 years younger, then I have another brother who's 6 years younger. So we go back, and soon after the war started, and being that my dad was a surgeon, he had to go back to the front every however many months for, like, you know, a certain amount of time. So every time he would leave, he would, you know, write a will, not knowing if he was going to come back and all that. So the very last year, so we got here in 89. So basically in 86, 85, 86, he's out at some, like, underground hospital. He's sick, has a fever, and he's like, I got to go home because I'm going to get everybody sick. So he leaves, like, within 10 minutes, this place gets bombed, everybody dies. And so he basically steals the car he's in and drives all the way back to Tehran. And, packs up his bags, calls his old professors and says, hey, I can't do this. So I want to say within a month he was in the States.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we came about 3 years after, once he got his green card.
Okay.
And had applied for the rest of us, or my mom and my brothers.
Okay. So both of your, where did they meet your parents?
They met, I think my dad was one of my mom's professors, or, like, you know, PAs or something, or teacher's aides or whatever. Yeah. They met in college.
Okay. But
at
they're
Tehran
both
University.
Iranian.
Yeah.
Oh, at Tehran University.
Yeah.
Okay. And then they both came with visas to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
You were born here.
Mm-hmm.
Your younger brother.
No, just me.
Just you.
And then the other two were born in Iran.
So how old were you when you guys moved back to Iran?
I was, like, not even a year.
Not even a year old, right?
So, like, the only thing I had going for me was my American citizenship until I was 18, because at that point you get to pick.
Yeah.
So,
okay, so you were not even a year old.
No.
And when was it that you ended up moving back to the U.S.?
In 89. I was 9. I think I had my 9th or 10th birthday in the States. I don't even remember anymore. But, yeah, I was 9 or 10. We came back.
How much do you remember from being in Iran those years?
Oh, all of it. It's awesome. I mean, it's great memories. I mean, there's, like, some scary ones in the middle there, but the whole thing is just nothing but great memories being that you're embedded in family, and that culture is multi-generational. So, and not only, well, yeah, it is multi-generational, but it's so, there's not just that nuclear family, it's everybody around you. So I remember summers, my dad's family would come to Tehran from Kermanshah, and his cousins that I wouldn't see throughout the year, except for the summer. So it was a lot of fun hanging out with these cousins. Mm-hmm. Then we would take trips up to the Caspian and hang out up there because my mom's family's from up there. So mm-hmm. we'd get to hang out, but they're all older folks. So we'd get to hang out with all of them. And it was a lot of good memories, lots of good memories. And we don't have any family here, just the five of us, honestly. And so it's hard having kids who, they don't really know our side of the family, right? So they know my husband's family. Mm. He's got a tribe for a family, and which is awesome. They have also maintained those Iranian-ness within that, like, family traditions. Mm-hmm. So, we've got dinners at grandparents' house, every other week, and all the cousins get to hang out, and the children get to hang out as siblings almost. So as much as I'm sad that they don't know my first cousins, but their own first cousins are very much like their siblings. So it's trying to pass a little bit of that on. It gets harder and harder as they get, my kids are 4 and 5, but it gets a little harder every time. I feel like they move away from the language. Mm. It's because I get lazy.
You don't speak in Farsi.
No. So I get lazy about it. So, but as soon as they show interest, then we're all about Farsi again. But then just like life and convenience sets in. And
Yeah. How do you think, they're 4 or 5, how do you think that they might identify, like, culturally, ethnically, nationally? And then how would you hope that they identify?
It really... So I still identify as Iranian when somebody asks me what I am. I was born here, and most of my life I've been in the States, but I still connect with the Iranian. So seeing that my kids have no connection to it whatsoever, except for grandparents and the rugs and my New Year's table, I would not blame them if they really had no connection with it. Honestly, I didn't become curious and feel this weird backwards connection until much later, like in my 20s, I want to say. Mm. That's basically when I got interested in the artwork and the rugs and what every different region had to offer. Last time I was in Iran, it was about 11 years ago, and I moved through the country like a tourist. It was amazing. It's like stuff that I'd read in books. I'm like, how come we've never been to Isfahan? How come I'd never been to Shiraz? Why have I never been to Persepolis? And you see these things in books. So it was nice to be able to take that trip. But it was hard to take it as a single female. But it took me until about, I don't know, late 20s to get super interested in it. So I wouldn't find blame with them if they never thought of themselves as Iranian, but I would hope that they would keep some parts of it. Yeah. Even if it's some words. Like right now, what they do have down is happy birthday. They totally know how to sing that one.
That's a good one.
But aside from that, it's a struggle.
So could you, if you don't mind, kind of going backwards a little bit, mm-hmm. back to Iran, because so you were there in the 80s.
Yes.
I was born in 93. Mm-hmm. And we had the kind of this like weird, I was born in Iran and left when I was 8 years old. And we had like just the same kind of amount of time in Iran. But for me, I don't remember a whole lot. And I certainly didn't see the 80s. So, and you were in Tehran, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I was born there too, and that's where I lived.
Yeah.
What do you remember? Like, what did it look like for you and your family's house? What did Tehran feel like to you at that age?
It felt huge. Mm-hmm. It felt huge. We lived in, if I remember the address, I think it ended with Maidanovanek. Mm-hmm. So we lived in this just like giant box. I feel like everybody lived in a box, yeah. Right? It was a huge house. Spiral staircases that went up. They were marble, I think. And they were super sharp at the edges. Like, I kid you not, I feel like every time I came downstairs, I would get my heel caught on a step, mm-hmm. and end up bleeding. I remember that house being such a safe place, even during the bombs. So we would basically go to school, come home, and live in the basement, because that's what everybody did during the war. So my mom was a professor at University of Tehran, and she had a TV show called Rahi Besuye Tandorosti. So
can you say what tandorosti means?
Wellness. Mm-hmm. Path to wellness.
Yeah.
So she, so as a, like, she was a big, to this day, she's still a big deal. Like, her students still call her and ask her to help them with plannings and implementings and conferences worldwide. She does not always feel up to it, but it's mm-hmm. super impressive that she does get these phone calls.
Yeah.
So mom would get home, and like, what, she had super busy days, but then once she's home, then she was all about the three of us kids. So we really played in the basement a lot in the evenings, because most civilians try to keep light, like residential lights, to a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, in case it was a big bombing night, you know, they wouldn't see your little area. So the last time I was in fourth grade. In the middle of fourth grade, the bombs hit somewhere really close by, you know, windows shattered, and it was really scary. And that's when my mom was like, well, okay, let's just go up and live up by the sea, mm-hmm. and we'll buy a house up there, live there until some of this is over, and then we're going to the States soon anyway. So we moved up to the Caspian. I've got to say, like, I think the 3-4 months, it was probably longer than that, we lived up there. It was surreal. Mm-hmm. I'd never met such a serene life ever. Yeah. And everybody in it is serene as well. Yeah. We lived near the water. Mornings, my mom would get up, go to the bakery, get some bad bread, come home. Like, hot bread you're eating in the morning. And to go to school, everybody just walked to school. But so did all the ducks along the way. It was bizarre. We'd go to school, very friendly environment, come home, and I think we all cried when we were leaving, because it was such easy living, and mm-hmm. it was beautiful, and it was serene, and it was green, and it's nothing like that what Tehran is like.
Yeah.
And absolute opposites. Yeah, Tehran's just so, like, go, go, go. Everybody's after their own thing. People have, like, 4 jobs just to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I don't know where I was going with that. I can't remember what your question was.
Well,
sorry.
You answered it perfectly. My question was just, what was it like? And you did a good job of, like, painting a picture of it for me to imagine.
It was good. We used to go, my brother and I, I went to a girl's school. He went to a boy's school right next to each other. We went to Madrasa Razi. And it was a lot of fun. I just remember, like, a whole lot of strictness at school. Like, you couldn't eat during certain hours, and you couldn't chew gum or have water. Like, compared to school here, a little different. Like, if I need to go to the bathroom, I gotta go.
Yeah.
But it wasn't quite
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. So at that time, it was also the revolution had just happened, but then the Cultural Revolution took a couple more years. Mm-hmm. But I think you were probably in school and it was in full force by that time, right? Like you had to wear hijab probably to school.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Like everything was just
held. Yeah. My mom didn't really, she like really held off on that whole like putting that Rusetti on me and all that. But like it got to the point where like the neighbors were like, well, how old is she? Why does she wear shorts? She's outside playing with the rest of the boys. And so, which she really never cared about at all. But, my dad's side of the family is a lot more traditional than my mom's side. And again, I mean, they're from Karamansha, so it's a very conservative culture. And so they're like, well, so-and-so said this and so-and-so said that. Don't you think she should probably wear pants? Oh, it was, I felt bad for my mom those last 3 years, but there was a lot of personalities she had to navigate through.
Yeah.
So that the three of us could have as untouched a life as possible.
Did they speak English with you guys at all, or was it just
no
all
I feel like the first, like the only things I knew when we got here was ladder, cap, and cup.
Those are very random things to know.
Very random. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so what do you remember of the trip back to the U.S.
The first time?
Yeah, the first time you moved.
Yeah. I remember being super excited, but one, I hadn't seen my dad in 3 years. Two, I was excited for my outfit. So my mom bought us all these little outfits. I had this pink Adidas suit, like top and bottom. I need to eBay this just so I can relive. I had a pink little Adidas outfit. I think I had like red shoes or something. My brothers, kind of the same. They both had their little outfits. And I was so excited. The flight was so long. As a 9-year-old, I was not really expecting to sit for that long.
Yeah. And they didn't have TVs
yet. I don't remember that part. I do not remember. I just remember being really long. But then we landed in Danville, Illinois, because that's where my dad was. And he picked us up in this white Oldsmobile, had red, like, dark maroon velvet interior. Holy moly. It was, we're like, oh, so this is America. A big car, smooth. Yeah.
So you were
lanes
into
that
it.
Like you just go in your own lane. No one tries to cut you off. Oh, you stop at the red light? Okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Who does that?
Okay.
Apparently in the U.S.
Yeah, very different.
Yeah.
Very different. So then what was that transition like, all of a sudden being in this place where you don't speak the language?
It was hard. For me, it was hard. It wasn't so hard for Sohrab, my middle brother. And my youngest brother, he's 6 years younger, so he was like 3 at the time. Sohrab was pretty good with it. It was really hard for me because, I mean, I had the no friends was one thing. Then the language was the other. And in my mind, if I didn't learn English, we'd move back. I don't know why it worked out that way. Huh. But I just very much made a case for it. And I would try not to speak English, but I would keep practicing my Farsi, like reading like older books. But at some point, I don't even know how I learned English aside from TV, but school, like within a week of moving to the States, my parents are like, here's where you go to school. I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Same.
You just got thrown in and you just picked it up, and bless their hearts. My, they did have an ESL teacher that walked around with us, Mr. Martinez, in Danville, Illinois, like population 5,000, everybody white.
Yeah.
Mr. Martinez, I don't know what happened to him, but he really tried.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
So.
So after you got adjusted, you were just in, did you ever want to go back to Iran to live?
No, not really.
Okay.
Once it happened, it really stuck.
Yeah.
Just convenience. fairness, a little bit of justice. Like, it just adds up, you know, when you don't have to do these things, you do them because you want to. Or I don't. So in school, you'd have, like, in the morning, there was a morning prayer, then a middle day prayer. And so all of these things, I kind of added up to, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm saying these prayers in a whole foreign language, which is Arabic. I have no connection to this language. I could be swearing at you for all I know, mm-hmm. but supposedly it's a prayer and, you know, I'm thanking something or somebody for this. So it, in me, I don't know if it's like this for anybody else, but in me, the 5-year-old me kind of just built a huge resistance. Like, mm-hmm. why? And yeah. And my dad was, he kind of still is, right there between, like, a fine line between an agnostic and an atheist. But he fluent in Arabic because he went to high school in Baghdad in a boarding school. And he used to, the afternoon prayers where they sing mm-hmm. through the minarets.
Yeah.
That's what he used to do as, yeah, he knows the Quran forwards and backwards, yet he is just not, it's just not his thing. Funny enough, he was actually, he was quite devout until he went for Hajj.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he just had, I don't know what happened there, but he just had this calling, like a switch just got turned off for him. No, actually, he talks about it. He's like, you look on one side and it's God's house. It's like the Kaaba on one side. And you look on the other and it's these palatial structures and nothing but poor people and beggars in the middle. And he's like, if God is that close, why would this be?
Were you raised with were you raised with any kind of, like, practicing a religion? No.
It was always you could do whatever you want to do. I used to go to church with friends. It was like an entertainment, more or less. We've had friends all over the smorgasbord of religion, so
mm-hmm.
Attended a whole lot of events with all of them, but it's just never really interested me.
Yeah. So what is, what was growing up, you said in your 20s, you got back into wanting to learn about the Iranian culture or history, just kind of getting more curious about it. What drew you to that?
I had a little bit of, like, lack of sense of self. It was, like, not really the culture that fascinated me. I just kind of needed to know more about me. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, like, some deep soul searching or anything by any means, but it just kind of got, like, right in the middle of my 20s. I'm like, you know, I've got, at the time, I was working at Univision, and I worked there as a regional credit analyst. So I did a lot of traveling. So that was single at the time too. It was a very nice, freeing, very, I was sure in myself, not because of, like, my education, but also because of my, like, the job I had, like, the job security and my, you know, monthly paychecks. It was great. And, mm-hmm. you know, live on the north side of town and all this stuff. I mean, all of that is really exciting for so long, you know, there you can only have so many drinks and talk to so many idiots, and then you just you still go home and you're like, wah, wah, that was, I could have saved myself, yeah. you know, the bad breath or whatever it is. So It was just that, really, just to kind of hone down and kind of learn about myself a little bit. I have no idea what this has to do with anything, but I have curly hair. And I kid you, once I started leaving my hair natural and not straightening it, is when I had an actual shift in, like, personality. I don't know what or how, but I, when I didn't have to worry about it anymore, it was either every day, it was like, it looked different because the curls never landed in the same place. It was really freeing. It was very liberating.
Yeah.
But I would, yeah.
Yeah.
None of that has anything to do with anything, but well, it's just like little milestones. These are quiet little milestones.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, it's funny you should say that because I remember, I'm actually curious if you feel this way at all. I remember in high school, like, trying, having a schedule for my hair and, like, washing it and then straightening it after it dried, because I thought that, like, straight hair is what looked good and, like, it's what the white girls had, and I look pretty white, but, like, people always know that I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, I want it to pass.
Yeah.
And I think letting go of that, like, desire to be passing as something else for me was, like, yeah, I'm also going to not do anything to my hair, and I'm just going to be who I am.
Yeah.
You know?
It just helps you pick up little bits of... I feel comfortable in it. I think that's what I found. Like, once I started wearing old scarves that used to be on my head, now they're now around my neck, I found some comfort in it. And the comfort over time added to my level of confidence. And I've never really had, I'm a cocky SOB. I don't have any confidence issues, but I don't know what it was. Like, the more I went inward and, like, wanted to be as Iranian as I could, even if it was, like, to borderline fobby, I felt good about it. I, like, the confidence, the self-esteem, like, I don't know what it did to me, but it was good.
Yeah.
But funny enough, I never wanted to marry an Iranian guy.
Well, I was just going to ask you.
No. I was like, no, not that. Because all of my, I had a lot of guy friends who were all Iranian. We were all single together. And we were all each other's wingmen. And it was, I mean, everybody had, you know, flavor of the month. I'm like, are you all that way? Like, so I just, like, I don't know why I prematurely just judged all of them to be like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
But your husband is Iranian.
He's half. His mom's English.
Oh, okay.
He's half.
So would you tell me about how that happened? How you met him?
We met against all odds, funny enough. So he lived, like, a couple doors down from my mom. My parents divorced in 2003. So where my mom was living, he lived a couple doors down from her. I never met him. She lived there for years. Never met him. We would be at all the same events. I had never met him. We have the same friends. And his uncle, I don't even know how I caught his uncle's eyes, but he's like, hey, you know, let's hang out, let's have coffee, whatever. And I'm thinking, like, are you trying to date me? Because you're a little old. But it was like total miscommunication in there somewhere. But he was, like, trying to vet me for him.
Yeah.
It was just, like, so, yeah. So we're at the same wedding, and he's like, oh, I have someone for you to meet. I'm like, I gotta go, dude. I've got stuff to do. And I left. Did not meet him again. It was just like, it's been so many, so many occasions after the fact that we talked about. I'm like, no, I don't know how. We met because a friend of mine called me up. A friend who actually graduated with my brother, and I went to high school with her husband, kind of convoluted. But she's like, hey, I'm going out to dinner. Nick and I are going out to dinner if you want to come with. And we're probably going to go see a movie. I'm like, oh, sure. Oh, it was a setup, unbeknownst. But yeah, he was there too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Half Iranian, you hit it off.
Yeah.
Okay. So did that end up being being a nice thing for you, having somebody who shares a
culture? Yes. Now, I throw advice like I know everything now, but yeah, it was not having to explain is so refreshing. Like, hey, my parents walk in, you should probably say hi. Or, you know, like those like cultural things that you don't have to explain. Grandparents, for crying out. That was a whole nother thing. Like, he's got opinionated grandparents. I've got opinionated grandparents. It's so much easier to navigate those crazy waters
yeah.
when you know, at least you know what they're saying, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I guess I looked at her the wrong way. I hear her saying something or another, you know?
Yeah.
But it's having that cultural similarity, even if he didn't speak, he doesn't really speak Farsi all that much, but having that cultural similarity makes it so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Not having to explain myself or my holidays or what the importance of, I don't know, a wake is or, you know, a death or it's become a lot easier. So now that friends that are with some other culture spouses, they're like, oh, he just doesn't get it. And I'm like, well, yeah, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
What do you I just like where I am. I mean, everybody's got their own bubble that they live in, but
yeah,
I like my bubble.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit before this started about the similarities in just situations that you can't control
mm-hmm.
with your childhood and your kids' childhood. Mm-hmm. So you grew up when you were little in Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Iran-Iraq war is happening. Now you're in Fresno, California. You've, against, you know, kind of odds or maybe mm-hmm. desire, have this, like, Iranian family with a half Iranian husband
yeah.
and Iranian little kids. And, like, just at the beginning of this year, Iran-U.S. relations, like, blew up.
Yeah, it made me... So, it makes me sad. So, my dad goes back every several years, and so... My dad came from nothing. I mean, his side of the family, they all grew up in this little village in Qasr Shirin, and everybody's like illiterate. And whereas my dad very much self-made. And so he went to school, he went to college, he became a surgeon, came back. And he'd always said, once I was able to financially, I'll get together with some of my other friends. We'll build a hospital out here, which he did. And so every several years they go back. And, you know, hang out with the students and do some training out there, blah, blah, blah. So he was there through Thanksgiving. And I literally was counting the days for him to get back because I wasn't sure what was going to be happening. It was like right in the beginning of nobody can come back or, you know, stay wherever you are. So it makes me sad that at least he can't keep going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Because his entire family's there. Yeah, we're here too, but, you know, all of his siblings are there. And I just hope at some point it's not such a crazy environment where I would be able to take my kids so that, like, my husband can get, like, his parents are afraid he may not be able to come back, you know, once he goes. So it makes it hard. It makes it hard. So 11 years ago, as a tourist, everybody I met was European. They're mm-hmm. all there from all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you here? Why, you could go anywhere. And one of the ladies that I met, she was English. She said, young lady, this is my fourth time here. I was like, oh, okay. I stand corrected.
Yeah.
So it's a great place to be. It's a great place to go. And I would love my kids to see that and meet my cousins. But, I mean, when that happens, who knows? Well, they also need to be bilingual for that to happen. But although everybody speaks English there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If if they're not able to go, or at least if they're not able to go to, like, what the country that we mm-hmm. know right now, what would you want them to know about it?
About Iran?
Mm-hmm.
It's such an awesome place. Not just the history, but the people. They're so friendly, and everybody is, I don't even, it's such a friendly environment. Like, it's that whole multi-generational household mm-hmm. kind of like seeps into everyday life. So there's like a hierarchy of respect, if that means anything. It's not like what you do in life. It's kind of like how old you are in life. And so I kind of like it. I think it's something everybody should see and feel. 'Cause like my kids love my mom. Just grandma walks and grandma can make anything better. But I don't know, like, the level of like, they love her, but, like, I don't know if they would be her ride or die the way, like, in example, my grandmother's 94. Mm-hmm. She's had a couple strokes. To this day, my mom's 72. She just turned 72. To this day, she's like, oh, she should be at home. She shouldn't be in an assisted living. I'm like, Mom, how are you going to carry her around? How are you going to wipe her bottom? How, like, you also need someone to wipe your bottom at this point. So, like, that level of, I don't know, selflessness, perhaps? I mean, I get it. It's like a mother and daughter, but I don't know you get that in American culture or in Western culture, not. But it's like, it's different.
It's a different kind of respect.
Yeah.
Different kind of respect and responsibility towards your elders.
Like, right now, like, husband and I, daughter and I talk, and we're like, we should, like, plan for our older years, because otherwise these kids are going to, what are they going to do? They're going to have their own families. Who's going to take care of us? It's not like, I wouldn't want them to take care of me. Like, but that's not what my grandmother says. My grandmother's like, you should be taking care of me. You know, like,
youngest daughter, don't marry.
Yeah, basically. So it's a divide, but I mean, I see why you're like, they could be your ball and chain, but you know, at the same time, almost like a parent, you know, what do you do?
Yeah.
So I do wish they could go back, and I do wish they could see how, what an amazing culture it is, and just the people.
Yeah. It's different to be surrounded by something than mm-hmm. just to know it.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2 minutes left. Is there anything else you would want to say if your kids are listening, maybe later on?
I wonder if they would.
Yeah, in 10 years.
Yeah. Well, Corbin is 5. Atlas is 4. And they are these two amazing little humans. I didn't even like kids. I never touched one. until I had my own. And they're pretty awesome. I mean, I'm pretty hands-off, where it's a very organic living situation. But they're amazing. They couldn't be any more different. Corbin looks just like his dad, with the same cool, calm demeanor. And he likes to please. Whereas Atlas, not only does he look like me, he also has my temperament. And he just does not give a shit. And he's got this amazing resting bitch face that it's, oh, I'm kind of proud of. But I love them. I love them. And like, the love they give back, they're tiny little humans. I don't know how they could have that much love in their heart. But, oh, these hugs and these random, like, expressions of love that come out of their mouths. It's so primitive. But man, it just means so much.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, here's hoping they listen to this.
I know.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.